All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining me on another edition. I never know which number we're on. It's called Conversations with Dr. Cowan and Friends. And today's friends are Robin and Shelley Hulbert. And I'm not sure if this is accurate, but my guess is of all the friends that I've had, there have been at least 30 now. You two may be amongst the oldest of my friends.
Aren't we?
I think so. I know like Sally Fallon was 20 some years, but the reason we were friends is we lived in the same area in Peterborough for, you know, I lived there for almost 17 years. And my son Joe and your son Ben were good friends for years. So that's really how we came together, and then other things. But the thing is, you guys may not have seen many of my episodes, but I like to tell a story that I don't remember, like, you went to college and da-da-da, because I don't really care about that. I don't even know if you went to college, right?
I went to North Carolina. You went to Duke, Tom.
Yeah, right. All right. There you go. So I tell something more personal, and the rule I use is that if you hear anything that you don't agree with, please correct me. Okay. Now, you may not even remember this story, and Shelley, I apologize because the story's about Robin.
Right, all right. I'm relieved.
you're relieved. But so, Robin, you can hear this, and again, I'll be interested to hear if you remember it and whether you have a different memory. So we're talking now 22, 23 years ago. At the time, I was had been living with a woman in Peterborough. And, you know, we were occasionally hanging out together and stuff, and Ben and Joe. And then I went to this conference where I was asked to speak about fairy tales in Fair Oaks. And I met a woman whose name was Linda. And things happened, and I came to a point where I had to make a decision about where to go with my relationships with these two women. And I would say I had a history of maybe not making always the best choices. So I decided I was going to find a good friend and run the situation by him or her, but it turned out to be you, so that's a him, and see what you thought. So we decided to get together and we went for a walk.
Right, we used to do that.
Yeah, and I explained my situation with my current person and what had happened with Linda, and I asked you, so what do you think about what I should do? God. And not necessarily that I was going to listen, but I knew it was sort of good for my soul to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like get feedback from somebody. And I don't know if you remember what you said.
I have a memory of walking with you. I have a memory of that time. Yeah. In life, but I don't remember.
Yeah, so you may not be able to correct me, but
I'll correct you anyway.
Okay, you can correct. So I don't know that if this is a quote, but you said something like, "Are you kidding me? You know exactly what to do," and it turns out I did, and so I ended up, you know, quickly marrying Linda, and you know, living happily ever after.
I'm glad I was that helpful.
Yeah, it was amazingly helpful, because it would have been less helpful for you to say do this.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh yeah.
Because then I would have not done it just because somebody told me to do it. You know, that's just...
you're a lot like me, Tom.
Yeah. So you had the good sense not to do that, but it was very clear to me how I was speaking,
right?
What you would have done in that situation. Mm-hmm. So great. There you go.
That's a great story.
So I'm to this day grateful. And I don't know if you even had remembered that story, but that is absolutely true, at least as far as I can remember.
I have a memory of that.
Yeah.
I don't know specifically.
So that's not what we're here to talk about.
Right.
Well, in a roundabout way, it is. We're talking about relationships, a different kind.
Right.
Yeah.
So I moved away and, you know, we haven't had much contact. And then I came back and I don't know how it came about, but maybe one of you or both of you sent me a, Tom, would you be interested in the biodynamic preps that we're making? And my answer, at least mostly to myself, was absolutely, because I have a long history of being associated with biodynamic crops. Right. You know, I've been around biodynamic things forever, not forever, but a long time. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Dr. Cowan's garden products are made on biodynamic farms.
Right. And
the group of people that I'm with here are biodynamic mostly. But, and I'm a huge gardener, you know that.
Yeah, that's what I remember.
Yeah, and you know, was the head gardener for Dr. Cowan's garden for a while. But I've never managed to figure out how to do the biodynamic crops.
Great.
And so I didn't do it. And yeah. People would say, well, you have a biodynamic garden or whatever. And I would say no, because I didn't think it was fair to say that.
Right.
And the thing that hit me about it was because I think there's a lot of people in that boat.
Mm-hmm.
They would love to do the biodynamic preps, or a lot of people don't even know what biodynamic preps are, but there's no way they can make them. It's just, you know. So the fact that you're making them, and as far as I know, you're the only people who are making them and making them commercially available, that's why I wanted to bring you here and first of all, explain, you know, what the heck is a biodynamic prep, you know, and even maybe where did biodynamics come from? Why should anybody care?
Mm-hmm. You want me to start?
Well, we'll let Shelley kick it off and then a little bit of our history too.
But yeah. Too yeah. Long. So, well, biodynamics began after World War I ended and there was a surplus of nitrogen for making bombs, which farmers realized made grass grow, because in fact, if they looked at these piles of nitrogen, grass growing around them, and the grass was greener near the nitrogen. So they started spreading it on the fields and saw good results, supposedly good results. And that is the way commercial fertilizers, chemical fertilizers work. They have an immediate impact, but not a lasting life-giving impact to the soil and the plants. So
that's
the kind
interesting. Of, you know, I've never heard where nitrogen fertilizer actually came from.
Yeah.
The big bombs.
So bombs.
So, not surprising.
It's actually, not at all.
It didn't take too many years in the early 1920s, 1924, when farmers came to Rudolf Steiner, who was a recognized scientist with his fingers in many aspects of science, and they came and said, what can we do? Our animals and our plants, we see a deterioration in their vitality. And so he said, here are some things you can do. And he gave them recipes, if you will, for various preparations for the fields and for their compost in order to support the health of the soil and the plants, and therefore the health of the animals. So that's sort of the short story.
Can you say any more about what, when you say decrease in vitality, specifically, what were they seeing? Do you have any sense of that?
I think they just saw animals that were not, and plants that didn't have the vigor and the ability to resist disease as much, weren't as hardy. Those would be the practical issues. You know, if everything's going fine, you're not looking for a solution. But if you're finding me, I don't know what the specifics were.
Right.
I'm guessing your animals were sicker and your plants weren't giving you the yields. And
right.
Right.
Or more
and maybe plants were more susceptible to insect damage. And right. So they were basically seeing a deteriorating, health, essentially.
It was.
Of plants and animals.
Yes.
And this was sort of the precursor of the organic movement that biodynamics came before, which a number of people aren't even conscious of.
Right.
But I think for us, the fast forward to me, so Shelley decided she wanted to milk cows 25 years ago. And the short story is we got into milking cows. And as you know, in New England, when you have cows, you have winter time and you need hay. So you've got to have fields and you need grass, you need hay, you need all these other things. And so she became the one interested in biodynamics. So she took a course, a year-long course, X weekends a month, and did the deeper dive into what biodynamics was. And I think I was along for the ride to help her out and do things. So I became Mr. Animal Husbandry because there are not that many cows in our part of the world. And bovine vets are a premium. They want to take care of horses, but not take care of cows. But it was learning from other people, the few dairy farmers that there were where Shelley learned how to milk cows, of just trying to understand that and then applying these biodynamic principles. And I think biodynamics has a mystique about it that people go, well, what the heck is, how is it, these preparations, how do we use them? And I was in that boat. It seems like it's you need to be initiated into the priesthood or you don't get it.
Yeah.
The initiation for me, I think, has usually been trial by fire, learn by doing.
Yeah.
So I think I started doing with Shelley's tutelage. And then, so part of the preparations, you could buy preparations from Josephine Porter Institute, but they're a preparation maker. They really weren't using the preparations and it wasn't an active farm kind of situation. And we, in our bones, became convinced that if you could make the preps on a farm that was using them, they'd have more vitality and we should be doing that. And that's what Steiner said. Make your preps on your farm. So the making them is important, but not everyone can make them. And gardeners, people who have gardens, they can't make them. There are too many parts.
It's easier said than done.
A lot easier said than done.
Right. So, that's the boat that I was in for decades. I would have used them, but I just, there's no way I could figure that out.
And I think
So I want to come back to what is biodynamics though?
Right,
So back to this story of Rudolf Steiner guiding these farmers, he said there are three things you need to pay attention to. One is see your farm as a living organism, every aspect of it, the plants, the animals, the landscape, the people, the climate, the microclimates, the place where you are on the land. This is the individuality of your particular farm. And it's important just to perceive it as that. It's kind of a way to, it's a baseline of imagining what you're working with. And then secondarily, use the preparations, which we'll talk about more, but which really are not too hard to use if you can get them. Yeah. And then the third is to pay attention to what we knew as human beings years and years ago,
thousands of years ago,
when we just intuitively worked with the energies from the moon and the sun and the planets and how they impacted the growth of plants on the earth.
Right.
So be more, we have to now sort of more cognizant. We have to figure that out. We don't just know it. So luckily we have, I just happen to have our biodynamic calendar on the table because we use it all the time, every day, but it shows us each day which parts of plants are most impacted by the cosmic energies. So whether it's the leaf part of the plant or whether it's the flower part of the plant, or the fruit or seed part of the plant or the root part of the plant. And that's just, it's wonderful to have a guide like this, because we open it up and we say, okay, today's a root day. We're going to plant our carrots and we're going to plant our onions, and we're going to do transplanting is also beneficial to do on a root day, because you really want the roots of the plant to take hold. You want the focus to be there initially. So it's a guide, and it's, you know, we're lucky it's all in this calendar, and we don't have to be astronomers to understand, you know, to look at the heavens and say what's going on today. So it's those three things: work with the cosmic energies, use the preparations, and perceive your farm as all aspects of it interrelated.
Okay. And so what are the preparations meant to do? And obviously they're, you know, so I have three. I have three boxes.
Yeah.
And by the end of this hour, I am going to know what to do with these, or you guys aren't leaving.
Good.
So,
so
what are the preparations? What are they meant to do? And what's in these boxes?
So the preparations for us are, I'll start in the spring. So in the spring, the practical part of Robin goes, what the heck do I do with these things? What's the sequence that I use? How do you do this? And I'd say we've always been interested in the educational part of it too. And we become more and more conscious with people asking us questions, how much you need a cookbook, you need a recipe, just do it this way, because the results are dramatic, or they are for us. Mm-hmm. So in the spring, one of the ones you have on your table is what Steiner called BD500, or horn manure.
All right, this one,
what's in there.
So what you do with that one, in the when the ground is available to you, when you can, generally I think of it when I can see the ground.
Yeah, so the snow is gone.
The snow is gone, and that's going to activate the earth in a way. So I look at it as that. So we take 500. Now here's the practical part of Robin, if I'm getting too practical.
So hang on, Robin. So when you say activate the earth, is that sort of a synonym for stimulating microbial growth in the soil?
I believe that's what you're doing. You're stimulating the microbes. You're waking them up. Our children had a wonderful book called The Root Children. And I think of the little root children coming up. They're ready to express themselves from the earth.
Yeah.
From within the earth. And I think this is a way to invite them up. It's the way I look at it. It's a way for me to remember what the heck to do. So what we do with 500 or horn.
What is it made of?
You take a cow horn, the horn of a cow.
Yeah.
And you take fresh manure. So we have cows. So we have fresh manure. And you stuff that manure into the horn of the cow.
Yeah.
You do this in the fall.
Yeah.
And you bury it in the ground. You bury it around the topsoil level. So 8 inches to 14 inches in the earth.
Yeah.
And you bury it for the winter, because the perspective is that the earth is expressing in the spring and the summer. So plants grow, flowers bloom. It's going upward. In the wintertime, there's still a lot of activity going on, to use Shelley's word, the cosmic activity. But the cosmic activity from the earth, the moon, the stars, and the planets is coming into the earth.
Great.
So it's working on that manure within that horn throughout the late fall, winter, spring. And then in the late spring, early summer, we dig those horns up. And the fascinating thing, when you dig those horns up and you knock that manure that you put in the horns, you knock it out, it's not manure anymore.
What does it look like?
It doesn't even smell like manure.
It looks like compost with a sweet smell to it. And if you put it between your fingers, and you'll find this when you work with that, it has a viscosity to it. There's a
clay-like almost.
It's a smooth, sort of a, I don't know exactly how to say it, but that's when you know it's done. And occasionally, colloidal-like, we use the horns more than once, but when you take the horns out of the ground in the spring, and we should have dug up a horn for this so we could have shown you, right? Because we're just about to do that.
Yeah.
And you take out, you shake out the horn manure preparation, and it's not converted. It still smells like manure and still has some, it's or partially converted, then you know that horn doesn't work anymore. And you set it aside, and this one doesn't work. We don't use that preparation. We just put it in the compost pile. And that's how we kind of know.
And that happens sometimes.
It happens. The horns work for about 3 years, and then they need to be retired.
And who knows why? But yeah, they need to be, they move out of production.
But it's so interesting to have, you know, that's just, anyway.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so there's something, so the horn has an important role in this process. Don't ask me to tell you how that works.
We're
very practical people. If it works, we do it. If it, you know, and we love to see the results, but we can't do the graduate level biodynamics course.
We don't need that. So you got the manure in the horn. It sits in a pit. I've seen that, you know, pits. And you basically put soil and maybe stuff on hay or something.
Yes, on top, you put soil on top.
Yeah. And then you dig it up in the late spring.
Dig it up, and then you've got this stuff that you described, and then what?
Well, we take that stuff and we put it in a clay jar, and we put that clay jar, it's encased in, there's peat all around it, and that's to maintain the vitality, and then it goes into a root cellar.
Wooden box. So we have a wooden box with a clay crock inside, with the preparation in the clay crock, peat all around the crock in the box, and then we have a lid that also has peat in it. So it's really, the peat is doing two things. It's insulating the preparation so that the temperature stays consistent and it's not subject to high and low temperatures, so it's more stable. And peat also is just protects it. It doesn't allow negative energies or even substances in. It's like a filter, if you will.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because we actually sell blankets made from peat fibers on our website.
There you go.
And the reason is they've been shown to protect people against like the harmful effects of EMFs and other quote, negative info. So got it. So you put this in a clay vessel in a box, and then
you can keep it. That's how we keep it. So when Tom Cowan orders it online, then
we go down to that. We don't pre-package any of this. We package each order when it comes, because it's these, I like to think of the preparations as living, filled with living organisms, and you don't want them to dry out, and you want to keep them as protected and stable as possible.
If you wanted to use it how then do you use it, or when do you use it on your farm?
We use it in the spring. So we used it after the snow is melted, when the ground is there, when the green grass is barely starting.
Got it.
When we can still look at the ground. That's sort of generally what we do. And the specifics are, for every acre of ground that we wish to put this stuff on, we use a small amount. And it's, Steiner said to use a quarter of a cup of this, of 500. So it's a quarter of a cup per acre of land is the way we think of it in relation to our farm. And so
not very much at all.
And put stirred in 3 gallons of water. And it's actually very much like a homeopathic remedy. You potentize the water with the preparation through a stirring process for 1 whole hour, which is the thing that I think, the step that a lot of people have a hard time getting beyond, because
it's daunting.
Who has an hour to do anything these days, right? But it's quite an amazing, do you mind if I tell you?
No, go.
It's my favorite part of the preparations, because I love stirring because of my experience stirring. And now you can put 3 gallons of water in a 5-gallon bucket from Home Depot. It's not great to use plastic, but really that's all many of us have. So let's just do it instead of say, I don't have the right thing, right? Yeah. And then in a small bucket like that, I like to stir with my hand because I find it just simplest, but you could stir with a stick or a wooden spoon or whatever. And then the other way we do it, because we put these preparations on acres and acres of hay fields, we take a big 55-gallon drum and put 30 gallons of water in it and put in 10 units of the preparation, and we stir with the wooden canoe paddle. And so that's much more of a whole body experience. But either way, it's, you know, I'm 63 and I can do it for an hour by myself. In fact, I don't like to share the stirring because I really like to do it, because what happens, and you'll never
know. You stir in the same direction?
No, but what happens, and you won't know this unless you do it, is the water changes over time. Yeah. It actually cooperates with the movement. So you're stirring in one direction until you get a vortex to the base of the vessel, which might take 15 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, depending on how fast you're stirring. And it doesn't really matter. You just do this process. And then once you get this vortex, whirlpool, if you will, to the base of the vessel, then you switch the direction. It's important not to let the whirlpool just sit, fizzle out and then go in the other direction, but to actually switch it so that you have some chaos. It's like a little storm in the water. There's some aeration that's going on and who knows what else, but that shift is important. And then you go in the other direction until you get your vortex again.
And then right away when you get the vortex to the bottom, you switch directions.
Well soon after. I like to look at the vortex for a minute because it's kind of cool, right? Yeah, so right. It's okay. But you know, you have some time. But before, you know, you don't let it fizzle out all the way.
Got it. Okay, and, so you do that for an hour, and then what happens to it?
Well, then what we do, and we often do it with friends of ours who come and help us do this, because we feel like having a community experience helps the earth and helps the people.
Yeah,
so we give them a 2-gallon bucket and a masonry brush is what we use those.
You want me to get one so you can see it?
It might be harder to get. It doesn't matter. Some kind of a brush.
All right.
Paintbrush.
Big paintbrush. Yeah. And you walk across the field with 20, 30 feet divide between the two people. And you walk and you spray. You get to be the Pope. You know, you get to bless the land. And so those droplets.
Yeah.
And people go, oh, well, they're only droplets. But remember, those droplets disperse across that whole area amazingly. It's just amazing what happens.
You have to think of it energetically as well as materially. And I think that's the difference between biodynamics, or what biodynamics offers or extends beyond organic farming, is that it brings in this energetic quality, where organics is bringing in a wonderful, healthy materials for your garden, and biodynamics takes it the next level to working with the energies as well as the healthy materials. And so when you're flicking this and you're not painting it on the ground, it doesn't matter that it gets on every square inch. If you're thinking energetic, it's just hitting the ground and just radiating out.
Got it. All right, let's move on. Now we got this one.
Let's go back to the next thing, because you've got two in that box. You have also a biodynamic compound preparation, which
which
Maria Toon, who was an incredible biodynamic farmer who died not.
So this one, it says biodynamic compost preparation.
Is that the one? Yeah, no, but look at the other box where the 500.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And that one has two preparations in it, and they look very similar, but they are different.
All right. One is in a plastic bag.
Yeah.
Well, it's not plastic. They're compostable bags.
Compostable.
As is the sticker.
Right. They're totally compostable. They're made from tree products, and we really didn't want the preparations to be housed in plastic. So we put them in that box surrounded by peat, also to help it stay stable until you get to use it.
Got it.
They can be
there's two. I see. So there's two, horn manure and compound preparation, both in that box. Got it.
Right. And that the compound preparation, Maria Toon is the one that came up with a compound preparation recipe. And the purpose of it is if you do not have compost that has been treated with the biodynamic compost preparations, which we'll get to in a minute, and that's that other big box, then the compound preparation is like a super energized biodynamic compost made with those preparations. And so then you can get the benefits of biodynamic compost on your, the energetic benefits of the compost on your land, even if you don't have the compost.
Most of us don't have enough compost. It doesn't substitute
for compost. You still need your fertility program, whatever you do, whether you're putting bone meal and blood meal and green sand, or whether you have compost or some combination, you still need that. But this brings the energetic qualities of the biodynamic compost preparations if you don't have biodynamic compost. And we just add that in. So we're stirring for an hour with the 500, but the compost preparation, compound preparation needs to be stirred for 20 minutes. We add it to the last 20 minutes of the 500 stir, because they both go on in the spring and they're both supporting the health of the soil and particularly the root growth. Everything that's going on in the soil in the spring is what they're supporting. And best to put them on, like Robin was saying, once the snow is gone and the ground is thawed, but any time before you have tremendously lush vegetation. And we even put it on the hay field after we cut a first cut of hay. So that the grass is low, so it can hit the ground, but not when your grass is this high. You know, it wants to hit the ground. It's not a foliar preparation. It's a ground.
What is it made of?
What is the biodynamic compound?
Start with a bunch of cow manure, like a couple of 5-gallon buckets, and we put in eggshells, basalt, which is a ground rock, and stinging nettle. And we chop that up, going round and round this pile of stuff, with the four things I just told you, chopping and turning with the shovel for a whole hour. And then we have a pit in the ground where we put part of it in, and then we put the compost preparations, which we'll talk about in a minute, that we would typically put in a big compost pile. We'll put it in like 5 gallons of this stuff in this pit in the ground, and then we put the second half in and put another set of compost preparations in,
and more manure,
and then a little more manure, and then we cover it up until it's totally decomposed. It's usually 3 to 5 months in the ground, and then it gets stored just like the horn manure in the vessel, in the peat, in the root cellar.
Got it. Okay.
So quick story for me. So I'm the neophyte 25 years ago, and Shelly's saying we do this woo-woo stuff, and I go, Shelly, this is woo-woo stuff. What the heck is this? She says, just do it. So many times
you're the only stuff that works,
and then you just keep your mouth shut and plow forward. You know, avoid confrontation at all costs. So we started doing it, and we kept doing it, and I felt like there was something going on. So we do it in our yard, we do it in the fields. Yeah. We have a field next door, you may remember, and then we have a 20-acre field 2 miles up the road that we're also haying, and then we have pasture. So we just keep doing it. And 10 years ago, after having a small little cow barn in the backyard, we decided we would build a barn. It was our retirement project. Some people go to Florida, we build barns for cows. And we needed to connect power and water from the house to the barn. When we built this house 30 years ago, there's nothing but sand here. They'd stripped all the topsoil, and they were able to dig a cellar hole with a bulldozer. And that's quite unusual in New Hampshire, where there are granite rocks all over the place.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the that we have a guy digging a 7-foot deep trench, because that's what you need to do when you have water. And he's digging the trench from the house to the yard. And after we put to the barn, after we have maybe put 6 inches of topsoil in the backyard so we could grow some grass. And this guy, Kevin, says, "Have you guys seen your topsoil?" And we go, "What do you mean? We know we put 6 inches on and we did that 30 years ago. And he said, "No, you should really look at this."
Wow. Yeah. Said,
"Why do you have so much?" And we had 14 inches of topsoil. This is a dirt guy. And he said, "I don't understand why you have so much." And we said, "This is what we've done. And we've done these biodynamic preparations, and that's all we've done." And he said, "Nobody builds topsoil this fast."
Wow. That is amazing. It's like,
so for me, the guy who needs practical stuff, I go, "You got me. Okay."
Yeah. We're done. Yeah.
I had looked in this biodynamic book once, and it showed it, there were two pages side by side, and it said biodynamic preparations will help to build topsoil, and showed a picture of this much topsoil with the ruler, and then supposedly the same cross section with the ruler. And I'm like, anybody could take any picture of any place and say this is what happened, but we actually then have the experience.
So does it happen everywhere? I don't know, but it's
probably. All right, I'm gonna move on here because
keep going.
I'm aware of the time. So what is this one, and what do we do with it?
So
those are the compost.
Those are the compost preparations. They go in your compost pile. There's just one little teaspoon of each one, and they're made. In various ways, which we can go into a little detail, but the big picture is they support your compost to support your plants, so that if you use biodynamically treated compost, and we put the preparations in the fall when we're putting our compost pile to bed and not going to fiddle with it anymore, not going to add more to it, when it is composted, it will then support the plants that it is, the gardens, lawns, fields, whatever it's on, to find and take up the nutrients in the soil and compost in the ways that they need them.
Yes.
So some of them need a little more nitrogen, some of them need a little more calcium or phosphorus, potash. And each of the preparations that go in the compost pile help the compost to become more vibrant in particular elements. But they even go beyond that, because you have to remember it's not just the material. There's the
compost. Right. So what's in these two little bags that you put a teaspoon in each one?
Okay,
so
There's six little bags.
Right. Six little bags in there.
These are the things that Steiner talked about, the six little bags. So one has yarrow in it,
right?
And the yarrow is actually encased in the bladder of a buck, of a stag. Yes. So thankfully we have a lot of
hunting
deer
friends.
And a lot of hunting friends who will go through the entrails and save us the bladders.
And if anybody out there is a hunter, we'll give you maple syrup for your bladder.
So, and there are interesting things that Steiner said about the horn.
Yeah, I don't think we need to do that.
Yeah.
But so that's one of them. And the other is chamomile. So chamomile is used, and that's encased in a cow part. The intestine of a cow.
Like sausage,
yeah.
But they're made of chamomile.
And we obviously have cows. And then there's stinging nettle, which is another one of the herbs that's grown that is used. And that's number three, yes. And the other is oak bark.
Yeah.
And the recommendation is to use white oak. So we have to search for white oak in our part of the world. There's more red oak than white oak. And
you grind it. And so you just take, you don't hurt the tree, but you just scrape off the exterior bits and then grind it and stuff it into the skull of any domesticated farm animal. We use cow skulls, but...
Yeah.
And bury it in a wet place. All of these are buried through the winter underground, again, taking all that
there's one more
energy that's that is underground in the wintertime, bringing it into these preparations. And
so the last one is dandelion. So I've been picking dandelion flowers in our field like a wild man and drying them. So there's
a valerian in there too.
And then yes. Valerian is the last one, which also grows in this part of the world prolifically. And you press the valerian flowers, and that's an extract
you get
that
a
you
juice,
have.
Right?
Get a juice.
And you ferment that, and then you know that is actually stirred and put in and on top of the pile.
So there are a lot of moving parts with the preparation, yeah. And we thankfully like to find those parts and source those parts and grow those parts.
Right, and it's
all right.
It's,
so there's six little bags in here.
And yeah.
Here's an example of the bag. And yeah. So what do I do with these bags?
Well, if you open up the little piece of paper that we gave
you. Don't open the bag until you're ready to use it.
But the instructional sheet,
right.
Which will show you in your compost pile.
Yeah.
Yeah. You flip it over.
He might not have one.
Might not have
Does
one
yours have a diagram on it? No.
No.
I think you're pre-diagram.
You're pre-diagram.
But you make six holes in the top of around the top of your compost pile.
Yeah, and this is in the fall when it's sort of finished.
Yep, when you want to put it to bed for the winter. And I use the back of a long rake handle, you know, just a stick or a handle of a implement, and make six holes that are going toward the center of the pile a little, not just straight down the edge, but and then it doesn't matter which goes where. You just put each of these preparations down into the pile, stop the hole back up, and then you spray the valerian on top, and which is
you're
a liquid
done.
And you're done. And we never turn our pile.
Wow.
If you do turn your pile, Steiner recommends that you reapply them, but we find that they also, and there has been a little bit of research or done on this, that they help the compost break down more quickly as well.
So you basically just build a pile up with garden waste through the summer, mm-hmm. and then you have a big old mound, and then you bake the six holes, pour them in, cover mm-hmm. it up, water it with a little valerian, and you're good.
Yep, that's it.
All right. Then we got one more, a little box, which says
box.
Silica.
The box is silica. Silica is everywhere. What percentage of the earth is silica? It's a lot. And so silica, we find quartz crystals, and they're all over the place here.
Yeah.
And we grind
Milky
them.
Quartz. Nope. Yeah.
We grind them. And so you grind it into a very fine powdery substance. And you need to be careful because it can be quite bad for you if you breathe it in your lungs. So
you
put a mask on and you put a very, so that becomes the foliar spray. So
but
that's
how do you, what do you do with that powder?
So you take that powder and you stir it.
The first thing is you grind it with like a mortar and pestle sort of thing?
Well, you can do, we do that, or we do it with glass.
Uh-huh.
You use the
first
glass.
First we crush it with a big mallet.
And then we put it in a ball mill, and then we crush it even finer. And so then that goes into a horn.
Yeah.
And it's covered. And then the horn is buried as well. It's a more opportunity for more energies from the heavens.
That's in the summer, though. That's buried
very different
during the summertime. It's much more connected with the sun. And after, when you take it out of the horn, it's actually put in a glass jar and set in the sun on a windowsill. So that is the way we store that. The way you use it,
it's a foliar spray. So you would put a small amount in water. So when we spray our large fields, we go to the Shelley example of a large 55 gallon drum that we fill with 30 gallons of water, and we stir it for an hour. Or in your garden, you would do it with a small 3 gallon bucket, 5 gallon bucket with 3 gallons of water. And you stir it for an hour. It's the same kind of stirring process.
How much in a 3 to 5 gallons of water, how much of this do you put in?
Well, you have one unit.
One, like a little size of a pea, an eighth of a teaspoon.
Uh-huh.
So again, you're making a homeopathic remedy.
Size of a pea in 3 to 5 gallons of water, stir it, same vortex back and forth.
Yes. And this, though, is a foliar spray. So this is for your plants. It enhances the flavor of your vegetables. It enhances the keeping capacity of the leafy vegetables and fruits, the above ground vegetables. And you only use it once they're well established. You use it in the summertime, and you stir it in the early morning. Right. And ideally you're applying it in the early morning, right around sunrise. On the contrary, with the other two preparations that the spring preparations, the horn manure and the compound preparation, those are stirred and applied in the late afternoon.
Got it.
The other thing about the silica, we usually do it in a fine mist spray, not right. the paintbrush spray, right. but we right. have a backpack sprayer. And mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. although one needs to be, the sun becomes more of an issue. I have a friend that has a vineyard in Oregon, and she said it's just very difficult for them to use silica because it seems to burn plants out if they do it at the wrong times of the day. So.
So you can do it. I've heard about the paintbrush method. That's you don't like that.
Not with silica.
We actually haven't experimented with the paintbrush method because Steiner recommended the fine mist as a foliar spray. So that's what we use. And the other thing, you can use it several times during the summer.
Right.
But we don't get around to it because of the long stirring time. However, it does supposedly, they work together, the 500 and the 501. So you get the 500 on, and then you use the 501 in the summer, and they have a sort of a
relationship.
They work collectively on your plants. So.
All right. I think I got it. I think we got the hour.
Look at the instructional videos.
We have done some videos to help people just imagine. So what does stirring look like, and what does this flinging look like, and what does the brush look like, and how do you actually put it in your compost pile? So, you know, they're just us, nothing fancy, not professional, but hopefully enough.
Great. So the only thing is I have a warning for you, which is if you give us your contact information, my prediction is you will be swamped in the next 2 weeks.
Well, we would swamp be us. Happy to.
That's okay.
You know,
that's okay. Can you give us, how does somebody order this? How do they get more information?
We have a website where you can order. It's biodynamicsolutions.org.
So biodynamic, all one word, solutions.
Yes.
With an s.org.
Yeah.
Right.
And do you have like a good supply?
Yes, we do. Actually,
a good supply.
We've been preparing.
You have to make enough way in advance because it's not.
You may get hundreds of orders.
That's okay. All right.
We can take 100
we're
orders.
We're prepared to supply. I mean, that's part of what we feel called to do, is help people to.
Yeah, this is amazing.
This little particular part of the world.
It's just, it's
nobody can do this except if you decide you're going to do it.
That's the part that's been interesting for us, Tom, is the commitment is, it's not Miracle-Gro.
Right. Yeah.
And you have to commit to this. And the more you commit to it, the more you see the results.
Right.
And why would I do it any differently? And there's no way I would.
And just the care that you guys with the Pete. It's really inspiring. I am honored to help because I know you're going to get a lot of orders.
Well, that it works is the part that is, and it's not magic. It is magic, and it's not magic. Yeah.
It's practical. It's reality.
It is. And the thing that is perhaps the most rewarding for the individual is it supports a deepening relationship with the earth that you find yourself stewarding in a very intimate way. And it's bringing tears to my eyes just to say that, but that is really important. And that's one of the reasons we feel so called to do this, and we love creating. And
it's wonderful. I can tell everybody that now that I know what to do, today is Thursday, Saturday morning, I'm doing this one. And
Afternoon. That one's the afternoon.
And yeah, if you have any questions, contact Robin and Shelley. Yeah.
And if you forget, it's okay, Tom. You can contact us again.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you so much.
Great to talk to you. Thank you.
We'll be in touch.
Great. Bye.
Thank you.